This is Living the RV Dream, the Free in My RV show, episode number 35 for December 1st, 2017.
I'm riding with my RV, wherever I want to be, 'cause I'm free in my RV.
Well, hello, happy campers. Welcome to another installment of the Living the RV Dream podcast. And I also want to call it the Free in My RV show. As you all know, that's like my motto that I have on my website and my YouTube channel. And of course, is the lyrics of my song. Yeah, I wrote that song. I arranged it and recorded myself too. So, it is December already. And I don't know when this happened, really. I mean, this year has flown by. This past week has flown by. So many things this year, so many blessings. And we had Thanksgiving, of course. And now, December. I've been doing this podcast for, what, almost 3 quarters, right? I took it over from John and Kathy Huggins early in the year. I think it was March or April. I've been trying to make it my own, and I really, really appreciate that you guys choose, like Mike Wendland says, that you choose to put me in your ear every week. I thought about changing it to a monthly format, but we all know that didn't happen. I enjoy doing it too much, even though this is the first time this year that this 35 episodes is the first time that I've done an audio only program. I've always been a video guy, so this is something new for me. And as I said, I've been a video guy even before I was dreaming of RVing, or even dreaming of doing a travel show for that matter. I wanted to do a show, and I knew that that it was coming. And I'm talking about probably 2005, 2006, and I wanted to do a podcast, but in video format, and that was really the only way to do it back then. YouTube, I believe, started in 2005, and the quality was horrendous, and there was no way to monetize it or anything like that. So I was looking for a subject, and at the time I called it tropical music, because I was a musician. Even then, called it tropical music with Robertico, because Robertico was like my artistic name, you know, my pseudonym in the community here in Miami. And that was the time when I was doing every Friday and every Saturday night until 3 a.m. And I aged like 20 years in 5. But I don't regret it. It was a fun time, and I did my other passion, which is music and singing and all that. But then again, I was doing this show, and I realized I ran out of material that I could put online without getting a copyright strike very soon, because all the music had to be like my own or copyright free music. So if I went to a concert and I wanted to document it as tropical music, I couldn't put the music, or if I went to like a festival or something like that. So that idea of tropical music kind of died after 10 or 12 episodes. And then I said, how about I do a travel show? I love to travel, and I had a couple of upcoming trips, you know. I had a trip to Europe, and I had a cruise, and I said, well, you know what? Let's do a travel podcast. Actually, I had just come back from a trip to Europe in 2006, and this idea came up in 2007, 2008, actually, was when I released the first episode of this. It was a video podcast, by the way, no YouTube yet. But then I realized, this YouTube looks like it's going somewhere. So I started also posting those videos on YouTube, still on my music channel that still exists. That's my other channel. You know, I have the Traveling Robert channel, and the other channel is just called Robert Morales. And that's where I put music, you know, once in a while, where whenever I still go singing at places, sometimes I will put those videos there. But anyway, I'm going on a tangent here. Eventually, I started listening to podcasts. I read many books. I don't know how many books I read about RVing, meandering down the highway was one of them, and then the one from Lolojo, Long Long Honeymoon. And of course, I read Living in So You Want to Be an RVer by John Huggins, and then I read the one about the RV show. And I said, you know what, eventually this is something that I want to do. And my YouTube channel started growing too in 2012, 2013. I had this video about a California road trip, and that video got hundreds of thousands of views. It is still my number one video in the channel, if you guys want to check it out. By the way, by this time I had already created a second channel just for travel. And well, the rest is history. I met the Huggins when was it? In 2014 at the Tampa RV show. Was it 2014 or 2015? I think it was 2015, because we already had bought the RV, and we interviewed him and we met, and then we went to the gathering, the first Living the RV Dream gathering. I still think maybe in the future we should do some kind of gathering at some point. Maybe we'll see if some kind of rally at some point in the future. But anyways, that's how I came to be a YouTuber, and eventually came to be a podcaster. But my first inclination, it was always the ability to produce video, but you know, tell stories about the travel, and something that my viewers or in this case my listeners would find some value in it. You know, some people send me emails like I am disabled, I cannot travel, but I travel vicariously through you, or you put me through a post-operation, you know, recovery and post-surgery recovery. And I'm like, those are the things that sometimes it's emotional, because to be able to touch so many people's lives is a great and humbling experience. And in the end, that's the reason why I continue doing this. And besides the business part, I mean, the fact that is becoming a business is just a byproduct of the tremendous you know, pleasure that it gives me to do this. And with that, let's go to mail. I gotta work on my jingle, so let's put a jingle here or something, right? Caroline Hogarth comments, we love the music, Robert. It sounds wonderful, and I have watched you for quite some time now. I love the Munchies music and music on your videos. Have a good day to both you and your wife. And the Munchies she's referring to, of course, is some videos that I have on my other channel of me singing at this restaurant that I sang for a couple of months in early 2016. That didn't last very long, because if you are singing every single weekend, and you are a weekender, not much traveling happening. But I took advantage of that time and put up a solar panel and put up my fantastic vent and all that stuff. I did a lot of upgrades to the RV during that era. So thank you very much, Caroline, and hope to see you on the road sometimes. And this is not a particular email, but and I feel like every 10 episodes I should reiterate this. People ask me about my tow vehicle, and how can my tow vehicle tow my trailer was 3,000 pounds dry, so you know that means that's 3,500 to 4,000 wet. Well, is wet the term, or loaded? I guess I usually try to travel light, so it doesn't get too heavy. And my tow vehicle, she's performed admirably. Is an old Kia Sorento. It's a 2004 models. But they made them very solid in those years. She's got 130,000 miles and going strong. It has a V6 3.5 liter engine, and it is a rear wheel drive, and it has a huge differential in the back. And that I think is what has made it possible for it to tow my Micro Mini so great. I mean, I've had a little trouble in the mountains, but you know, that's before I learned that speed is really the problem. By the way, that Kia Sorento is capable of 3,500 pounds tow, and I believe the tongue weight is 500 pounds. But anyways, If I try to go up a 5% grade or 6% grade that lasts 5 miles, like when you go up the Cumberland Plateau, it comes to mind, the Monteagle Mountain going from Chattanooga to Nashville, for example. And that's a long, steep grade. Don't fight it. You don't have to go 55 miles an hour. Just hop on the right lane, put on your hazard lights, and go like the rest of the truckers at 40, 45 miles an hour, whatever, you know, whatever speed your vehicle can handle. I mean, it's not the best. It's not optimal. I wish I had a diesel, you know, big truck, but I don't. And I cannot afford one right now. So it's what I have. And I realized this because in the narrow roads where you have to go 30 miles an hour, you know, in those smaller mountain roads, not the interstate, the vehicle performs perfectly. And even it brakes perfectly. I have the trailer has very nice trailer brakes and you know, I downshift, you know, good technique. But and the other day I responded to someone on Facebook, someone who asked this same question, you know, because they were towing with a somewhat underpowered vehicle. And if you can help it, please do not get the proper tow vehicle. Don't get something borderline proper like mine. But they were asking, you know, because they felt that like they had to go with the same speed as everybody else. And to be honest about it, you are an RVer. You are like a big commercial truck. You don't have to go 80 miles an hour down the freeway. If you are towing a trailer, you shouldn't go any faster than 65 because that's the rating for your tires. And some of those tires, you know, the low quality tires, the ones that they call the Chinese bombs. You're not supposed to go that fast. Sometimes I will do like 70. In order to pass someone, or if I am like in I-95 in Miami, where if you don't go 70, I mean, it's more dangerous to go slow than to go fast. In those cases, I will speed up a little bit, but otherwise, you know, just take your time. We're not in any rush traveling with our trailers in tow. Now for the next segment, the destination of the week. You probably saw it on Facebook if you saw my or the video that I released yesterday on my YouTube channel was from there. This last weekend we went back to, because we've been there so many times, to the Everglades National Park, and we stayed at the Long Pine Key Campground, not to be confused with Big Pine, that's in the Florida Keys. Long Pine Key Campground, and this place is primitive. You know, it's mostly for tents. You can park with an RV, but you have no hookups whatsoever. And it is $20 the night. And the reason we went there was not for the wilderness, if you will. The reason we went there was because I wanted to test my new RV cellular signal booster that I received from the nice folks at Wilson Electronics. And the particularity of this place is that it's the signal, at least from AT&T, which is the one that I have, is very faint. So it was a good way to test if this thing was really going to create a usable signal from nearly thin air. There's a little bit of signal if you stand on top of the trailer on the roof, which I hear you're not supposed to, and then you stick your hand up in the air with the cell phone, you will get one bar. So that's, and one bar on and off. It'll come, it'll go. So, and with the WeBoost, spoiler alert, if you want to watch that video, it's 20 minutes of me yapping away about it and installing it and then testing it. It worked. We got some usable, voice communication was rock solid. I had 3 bars and I was able to talk to my mom. We were able to talk to our son perfectly. But data was on and off. At some times we were able to even watch YouTube videos. Not full quality, but it worked. But some other times it would just say, no internet signal. But that was the ultimate test. We were really, really far away from the closest tower. But that's not the destination of the week, because I am so ADD that I digress and I go on a tangent all the time. As you know by now, if you've been listening for any length of time, I wanted to talk about the Nike missile site, which is a missile site from the Cold War, really. They shut it down in the 70s, I think, the late 70s. But it's a missile site there, and there's no sign. Nobody tells you this thing is there. You have to look for it, research it, and you have to show up at a certain time by this research building they have there. And I should have the information. I'm not going to go into too many details. It's called the Nike Missile Site HM69. Just Google it, and it's going. The first result is going to take you to the National Park Service and this site. They do offer tours, and it is very seasonal. It is from like December to March only, you know, when it's not too hot down here, and when most of the tourism is here, to be honest about it. You're just going to have to go to the website and check the schedule, and then you have to wait for the ranger at a certain time at the National, it's called the Daniel Bird Research Center. It's a pink building in the middle of nowhere, and there's no signs, but if you look it up on Google Maps, it is there. It is by the Royal Palm Visitor Center there in that area of the Everglades, the one you access by Homestead, Florida. Because, you know, you can access the Everglades by many areas. But here's what it is. By the way, we almost didn't make it on time because we left for the Everglades like at noon, and by the time we got there, and there's always a long line to go into the park, and well, we were supposed to be by 3 p.m. at this place, and we were there by 3:02. And the guy had already started his explanation, but he had just gotten started. You know, you just show up there and the ranger is waiting for you. I don't feel so bad because some other people snuck in even later than us. But anyways, a very, very cool explanation. You know, he gives you background history of how they put, why they put these missile sites here. Most of our missiles were in the northern border, you know, pointing towards Russia over the Arctic. This is back at the beginning of the Cold War in the 50s. But then in the 60s, we had this madman, Fidel Castro, down in Cuba. So they put some missiles here just to guard the southern border of the United States. You know, they were anti-aircraft missiles, but they could also fire, you know, to ground subjects. Now, what's the word that I'm looking for? Targets. Anyways, and it explains during the Cuban Missile Crisis in 1962 how everything got really tense, and the whole world was certain that we were on the brink of nuclear war. I don't think it was ever that bad. I don't think anybody's crazy enough to launch nukes, but you never know. So, it was a very educational and very pleasant. And this guy, the ranger, you know, you can tell he had a military background and he was like nature background. You can tell all these guys love their jobs. You can tell. I don't know where the National Park Service finds them, but 90% of the rangers we found were like very, very pleasant and very knowledgeable, and you can tell they love their job. So that's the destination of the week. If you come down to Miami and you are in the Everglades, it is one site out of many that I recommend you visit in the Everglades National Park. And I'm going to make a short video soon about that. And now for the news. I read an article, and this is in the RV Pro, for the RV Professional magazine. It's called Stepping on the Gas and the Popularity of Gas-Powered Class A Motorhomes Over Their Diesel-Powered. Breathing shows no sign of slowing down. So apparently people are buying more gas powered motorhomes than diesel. And you know, I think that also stems from the fact that a lot of people are downsizing. There's this trend, especially among younger RVers, where they don't want that big diesel pusher anymore. I know some people just swear by them, and I think everybody should just have the RV that suits their travel style, you know, as long as it is safe and suitable for full timing. But it seems to be a trend. I'm gonna put a link to that article, and a lot of people are are going even down to B pluses and C, yeah? Present company included. But I'm going to talk more about that in future episodes when we go to the Tampa RV show and start seeing more RVs. The Class A market, you know, the number one is the infamous Thor Industries, then Forest River, then Rev Recreation. Number four is Winnebago, believe it or not. And number five, Tiffin Motorhomes. And of course, you know, if I ever want to go that route, because I've changed my mind about RVs so many times that I wouldn't be surprised. Maybe as I get older, I decide that I prefer, you know, something like a 45-footer diesel pusher. And if I can afford it, yeah, sure, why not? I don't know if I want the two bathrooms and something that luxurious, but I do like the Newmars a lot, those Newmars Dutch Star and the Integras. I thought the Integras were very, very cool units. I don't know all the specifics, but anyway, check out that article. I thought it was interesting. And also, in other news, the RVIA National Trade Show is going on, and everybody and is there. Every blogger and vlogger I've ever read, it's there. You know, some are with Winnebago, some are with Airstream, some are with Hymer, and I've been watching all their videos on YouTube and reading a little bit, and there seems to be a trend going towards this units that it is like an iPad, and with that iPad, it's a screen somewhere in the motorhome, and with that screen, you control every aspect of the motorhome. And I'm a little old-fashioned when it comes to this stuff. I think it's called the multi-wiring or something like that. But anyways, I am of the old-fashioned opinion that a switch never fails. And when that little screen with that Android software that may get an update, and then boom, it crashes. And then you cannot turn on your furnace. Give me a switch any day. Maybe let me know what you think about that. But that's my thought. Also, in other news, in December, we have an RV show in Palm Springs, the Palm Springs Area RV Show and Sale on December 7th through the 10th. So that's next week. So if you're in the California area, maybe you want to check that out. It's located at Riverside County Fair and National Date Festival Grounds in Indio, California. So maybe that's a good place to preview what's coming in the near future in the RV world. And now I have another segment for the tip of the week. I found this article in the FMCA website, and it's very timely because some of us are going to want to camp in the winter. I remember listening to back in the day was the Road Trekking podcast, I believe he's renamed it now, but about Mike Wendland camping in the Upper Peninsula of Michigan in the dead of winter in the snow, and he said he would flush the toilet with antifreeze. Well, I found this article, and it's by Mark Polk. As you know, he has the RV Education 101 website and YouTube channel. And the article is called Polk's Top 7 Tips for Cold Weather RVing. And some of us want to enjoy the motorhome all times of the year. So the first consideration for cold weather RVing is if you'll be traveling in temperatures below freezing. And if that is the case, then the water in the RV, you know, your plumbing lines, the tanks could freeze. And it could result in repair, you know, you have to repair your burst pipes. So that would ruin, really, your RV trip. And to avoid this from happening when the temperatures dip before freezing, you know, 32 Fahrenheit, 0 Celsius, is to travel with the water system winterized. And it's, according to him, it's actually much easier to winterize a motorhome than most people think, and it doesn't cost much either. And he has winterized and winterized the motorhome as many as 3 times in one winter. So I still hope to never have to winterize myself, living here in South Florida, and hopefully when I'm full-time and follow the weather. But At some point, maybe you'll have to winterize, and I do believe you can flush the toilet with antifreeze, with the RV antifreeze. And if you leave a little bit of antifreeze on those holding tanks, they will not freeze. So that's good. Okay, number two, the good news is possible to use the oh, there you go. I was talking ahead of myself here. I read the article, but I didn't know that number two was coming up. The good news is that it's possible to use the bathroom facilities when you are traveling with an RV winterized. We take 1 gallon jugs filled with water to use in the toilet. If your holding tanks are not heated, you can put some RV antifreeze in the holding tanks to prevent its contents from heating. And that's actually, that's something that I've been looking into in all the RVs that I've been looking into, you know, for our future. If it's that the RV, the holding tanks have heating pads, because eventually we're going to reach that town and it's going to dip below freezing. It's going to snow and we're not going to be able to move. And I want to have like a plan B besides winter ice. But anyway, number three, and he says, when we arrive at our destination, I try to select a site that will be exposed to the sun throughout the day, but also where there is some type of windbreak available, and position the motorhome on the site so the front or rear will be facing the brunt of any wind, not the side of your RV. Normally, once at the campground, we use the water system on the RV. All the water lines in our motorhome are in a heated space, so we don't need to be too concerned about the weather, the water system freezing, as long as the RV has heat. We leave the water heater turned on whenever the water heater tank is full, so there's no chance of it freezing. And we have an electric hookup. We operate the water heater on electricity. If not, we operate on LP gas, of course. Number four, it is important that you know where all the plumbing on your motorhome is located. Some RVs have heat ducts going to the basement storage areas where the water system is exposed to the outside temperatures, but many RVs do not. If portions of the RV system are below floor level in areas that are not heated, it is possible for it to freeze and damage the water lines. If you are hooked up to an external water supply, one option is to leave the faucet in the RV dripping. This can help keep the water moving and decrease the possibility of water lines freezing. Another option is to use the heat tape to protect any exposed water lines. Heat tape can be purchased at most hardware stores and all that. And I've noticed that in my particular RV, the water lines are inside. So at least the fresh water lines are inside. The sewer, I do believe the tanks are right there underneath. So I would only have to worry about my holding tanks in that case. And number five, if it is extremely cold outside and the possibility exists that outside water supply could freeze, or if the campground water supply is shut off for the winter, I try to fill our fresh water holding tank and use it for all our water requirements. Again, keep in mind where your fresh water tank is located. Ours is in the heated area. Yeah, normally they are inside, like under the couch, but sometimes they are not. In the campgrounds shower facilities, if the campgrounds shower facilities are still open, it's a good idea to use them to avoid the great water holding tank from filling so quickly. In this situation, it may be in your best interest to keep the RV winterized and just use the campground facilities anyways. Number six, the best source of heat is to use the RV's forced air furnace. There are a couple of things you need to be aware when you use the RV furnace. First of all, it will consume more LP gas than any other LP gas fired appliances. The LP gas should be full before leaving for your trip, and you will need to monitor the LP gas supply carefully during your stay. Second, if you're not plugged into electrical supplies, the furnace fan can quickly drain the auxiliary batteries. Batteries that are not fully charged in cold temperatures can freeze, rendering the RV furnace unusable. I recommend that you plan your stay where you have access to an electrical supply when camping in cold weather. When we are plugged into electricity, we set the forced air furnace on a lower setting and supplement the heat with thermostatically controlled ceramic heaters. These heaters work extremely well, and you don't need to be connected to a fire or concerned about fire or carbon monoxide. And number seven, If you will be camping where you don't have access to electrical hookup, one option is to use the generator. Generator can keep the RV batteries topped off and allow you to use RV furnace. If you will need to have a sufficient supply of fuel on hand for the generator, if it is a portable generator, make sure the exhaust is directed away from the area where you're camping. But yeah, that's usually always the case. And never operate a generator indoors. That's not a good idea because of the carbon monoxide. But also, and this is something that happened to me in our last trip to the Everglades. Oh, I didn't tell you this anecdote. Be courteous of your neighbors and leave your generator inside your site. This guy had a long extension cord, so he wouldn't hear his own generator. And he had it right next to our site. And we didn't even use the generator ourselves. There was no need. The temperature was fine. But this guy had the generator like 50 feet away from his site, so he wouldn't listen to it. And it wasn't even that loud. It was a Honda 2000. But anyways, that's general etiquette if you are in a campground and you have a portable generator. Anyways, I've got one final segment, and this is more for comic relief than anything else. I've decided to call it, and this is not my original idea, by the way. Another YouTuber started doing this, and then he quit. So I said, why not? Let's do this. And this is called Nomad News. And I'm going to tell you stories from all the people not all of them, of course. It is impossible. There's thousands of people nomadic and telling stories about their lives. But Nomad News, so you know what's happening in the YouTube community, in the Nomad YouTube community. So this is called the Nomad News. And here we go. Last I checked, Eric Jacobs, nomadic fanatic, was hanging out with campervan Kevin and Felix, big dog, and selling t-shirts to fund replacing his fallen or broken tooth. Will we ever find out what really happened? How he lost that tooth? Oh wait, breaking news. He is now or was really in Tallulah Falls in the Chattahoochee National Forest. By the way, that's the video I'm editing right now. People are going to think we're hanging out even though I was there over a month ago. So now we've crossed paths many times, but never at the same time. By the way, Camper Van Kevin is going full force on Patreon, releasing his videos there first and then to the general public after the fact. At least that's what he's thinking of doing, and he posted it on Facebook. Paul and Lorena, the motorhome experiment, are sipping bourbon in Kentucky. Well, at least Lorena is. Kaylee of the Freedom Theory is organizing her baby closet. As you know, she is expecting soon a baby. Joe and Kate Russo of We Are the Russos went to Costco, and I still don't know how all that stuff fit in their tiny Hymer, but looks like they figured it out. I may have them soon here on the podcast, by the way, as an interview. Nathan and Marisa and Hensley of Less Junk, More Journey are still much ducking in Tennessee, but I can't wait to see where they will go next. Chris and G, well, Chris is having some mechanical issues with his schoolie. Kaylee, Kyle and Olivia of Driving and Vibing are window shopping for Airstreams in Bolton after they visited one of my favorite towns in California, Solvang, and they didn't taste wine. Unlike Helen in Georgia, Solvang is actually a town founded by Danish immigrants. The other one I mentioned was not. Steve and Teresa of The More We Explore are heading east. James, Wanderlust Estate, keeps losing weight and gaining work experience. Living Free Mike is selling some pretty cool-looking t-shirts. Check him out. So am I, by the way. And so is Nomadic Fanatic. Lydia of Simply RVing killed yet another deep cycle battery, but her friend Louis, Rolling Earthship, helped her replace it, and sadly, he had to go back north for work. As she, presumably, goes back south to Florida. When are these two finally going to get together, huh? Lolojo, the Fit RV, the Wendlands, and a bunch of others are in Louisville at the Industry RV Show, talking to Winnebago, or Hymer, or Airstream. And Robert and Jessica of Exploring the Local Life gave us a behind the scenes, it's more like a blooper reel this week. By the way, they will be making a cameo appearance in one of my videos really soon. Meanwhile, a lot of people are heading west to the Quartzsite area and Yuma, you know, all over Arizona. Wonder what's up with that. By the way, Heather Dupree turned 36. Happy birthday, Heather. And finally is some sad news here in the RV community. Chico of the channel Rufus and Doofus has passed away. All of his friends, we're very sad about this loss to the RVing community. Paddy Wagon Travels and RV Debs both made videos about this. May he rest in peace. And I do not want to end this with a downer. And to end this episode 35 of the podcast, I want to thank everybody. I mean, it's been overwhelming. So many people have bought my CD. In fact, when I finish recording this, I have to go to the post office to mail another batch. I've sold almost half of them, and this is unprecedented. And I really appreciate it, and I'm really happy that you all like my music. And if you want to get it, it's sometimes it doesn't work, but just go to freemyrv.com. The redirect is kind of weird. So if that doesn't work, just go to the blog, travelingrobert.com/stickers, or just go to travelingrobert.com, you know, my blog, where the show notes for this podcast reside, and click where it says merchandise. And over there you have the CDs and the stickers and t-shirts as well. So I want to thank my patron, Eric. He's my patron at patreon.com/travelingrobert for pointing out that in PayPal you can actually print labels. You know, I was doing it the hard, old-fashioned way with a pen, you know, writing everybody's address on the envelope and then going to the post office and either making the line or spent, you know, many minutes in front of that automated machine that they have. When PayPal has all this stuff figured out, they just print a label, you stick it to the envelope and take it to the post office. Yeah, when you don't know something, it's life is harder, I guess. Hey, by the way, I figured out a way to ship international all my CDs, because shipping, it's kind of expensive, even for Canada, even if just north of Wisconsin, you know, in Canada, it triples the price. You know, I'm paying like $260 to ship in the United States. And of course, I include that in the $10 price for the CDs. But then Canada is, I believe it's like $8, and Europe and the rest of the world, it's like $12, $13. I don't know exactly, but I am going to be selling to Canada for $18, and that will cover the cost of shipping. That's the easiest way that I thought to figure it out. And to Europe and the rest of the world, most countries, I don't know if Zimbabwe is going to be this price, but like Australia, you know, most of Europe, I'm going to sell them for $20. And if you go to the page, if you want to buy the CD, there's a drop-down menu where you can select that. With that, I want to thank you all for listening. As always, check out my YouTube channel. Check out the show notes for this program, which will be at travelingrobert.com/0035. No. That's not the address. Rewind. travelingrobert.com/podcast/0035. That's where you will find the show notes, and you can play the episode from there too as well. Until next week, thank you so much for listening, and see you on the road. Riding in my RV, wherever I want to be, because I'm free in my RV. Yeah, I'm riding in my RV, wherever I want to be, because I'm free in my RV. Yeah.
riding in my RV, wherever I want to be. And guess I'm free in my RV. Yeah, I'm riding,
riding, riding.
I'm riding in my RV,
my RV,
wherever I want to be. Cause I'm free in my RV, yeah. Wherever I want to be, cause I'm free. Yeah. Break it down.
Riding, riding.
Oh, riding in my RV.
My RV.
Wherever I want to be. Oh, cause I'm free in my RV. Yeah.
My RV,
whenever I want to be, cause I'm free. My RV, yeah, riding,
riding, riding.
I'm riding in my RV,
my RV,
wherever I want to be, yeah, cause I'm free in my RV. From Florida to Tennessee,
my RV,
wherever I want to be, cause I'm free in my RV, yeah, riding, riding in my RV, wherever I want to be, cause I'm free in my RV.